Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got a great show today. We have Frank Pursuti with us. He's a PhD, and he's going to be talking about his latest book, Chrysalis Crisis, How Life Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation. Great book. It's going to be a great show. So guys, sit back, relax, take some notes, and then go out and get this book. Because if you're looking to change your life, this is definitely information that will help you. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. The real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the absolute fullest. Now, my clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com. And I invite you to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest this evening, Dr. Frank Pursuti, is a licensed clinical psychologist and certified hypnotherapist in private practice in Charlottesville, Virginia. He is the founder and president of Associated Clinicians of Virginia, which provides psychotherapy and organizational development services to individuals and to business. Dr. Pursuti is chairman of the Institutional Review Board at the Monroe Institute in Faber, Virginia, and he collaborates on research related to NDEs, psychic phenomena, and the survival of consciousness at the Division of Perceptual Studies, a research unit of the Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He's the author of Chrysalis Crisis, How Life Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation. And you can check out his website at frankpursuti.com. That's FrankPursuti.com. Welcome, Frank. Can I call you Frank, or do you prefer Dr. Pursuti?
No, I much prefer Frank, and thank you for having me on your show, Monique.
Oh, it's great to have you. I absolutely love the book. You know, there's so many books out there on transformation and consciousness and all, but you were able to truly crystallize, if you will, this information very succinctly. I love the stories and how you relate the stories to each topic that you're talking about, but it's easy to read. When I was reading the book, I could see myself in the story that you were talking about. You know, I saw myself like in the story of Bill when he had his NDE, and I could see the accident. It was really riveting how you wrote the story. One of my favorite authors is Stephen King, and it's like you wrote a Stephen King-esque type book. Not scary, with great detail. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you found it. Interesting and easy to read. That was my intention, and I wanted to share the information as if I were sitting in the room with somebody who was having the experience. So it would feel very very layman friendly. I didn't want to get lost in any kind of psychobabble.
Well, you definitely accomplished that. So, you know, you're a psychotherapist, you're a hypnotherapist. How did you go from straight psychology to adding in the spiritual component?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll be honest with you, my interests in metaphysics and psycho-spiritual concepts preceded my moving into clinical psychology. I actually grew up in a family where my grandfather, my mother's father, was kind of from Europe, Italian descent, and he was influenced by the 19th century spiritualist movement. And he came over into the United States, and then his two sons and my mother both got interested in that as a result of his influence. And also there was another organization that my one uncle joined and encouraged my mother and my other uncle to join it, and myself and a cousin of mine, and that's called the Rosicrucians. So I had been raised on metaphysics and mystical concepts, and I was also being, at the same time, I was growing up in the 1950s Catholic upbringing in the city of Newark, New Jersey. So I was trying to reconcile, you know, traditional Christian thought with metaphysics and concepts like reincarnation and out-of-body experiences. And so all that ultimately led for me to say, what's the closest field that I could possibly learn and gain more insight into these concepts? And that moved me into clinical psychology.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what,
I was going to say, so it's been a long, my career has largely been trying to make sense out of conventional kinds of problems that people bring to psychotherapy, and at the same time working with people who present spiritual emergencies, which are usually phenomena like NDEs and out-of-body experiences and beholding spirit or, you know, psychic phenomena.
Okay. It's amazing finding that more and more psychologists, psychotherapists are jumping the chasm into metaphysics and bringing that into their practice. Have you seen that with your colleagues?
I see the whole field, yes. I do see it opening up. And I'll share with you that I believe one of the more resistant professions to acknowledging, you know, that there are psychic phenomena that are valid and that are exceptional experiences that fall outside of what we've come to understand in conventional psychology, and not pathologize them. Psychology has been a field that has been slow to embrace those, because there's always another attempt to explain. Like, for instance, somebody has a past life memory breakthrough, or they have an out-of-body experience. You know, I think my colleagues might be quick to think in terms of dissociation or multiple personalities. And so there was always another alternative consideration, but it doesn't always apply. Like even William James, our father of American psychology, was once at one time researching dissociation and came across a very valid medium, somebody who was really good, and that opened him up to that. And I do think that the field is broadening. I do see my colleagues now more interested in integrating meditation trying to, without becoming somebody's guru or minister, trying to integrate spirituality as a component of what they do in therapy.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that you grew up Catholic, and you very distinctly separate religion from spirituality. Could you tell us what you feel that distinction is, and why at some point possibly Catholicism didn't float your boat?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Catholicism, and I always tell everyone that even though I had a very traditional Catholic upbringing, while at certain points in time I no longer embraced all the explanations they provided, they did raise the questions for me. And so I enjoyed my religion classes, and ended up, because of other reasons than academics, at a Catholic university, I enjoyed my philosophy courses and my interpretation courses with the priests that were teaching. But for me, I think what happened early on, like for instance in my family, as you know, when people would talk about miracles and healing, I remember my mother and uncle saying, these are phenomena that are not just, you know, you don't have to call them miracles. In India, they call them siddhis, and other religious traditions have different explanations for these phenomena. And so that started loosening my attachment to Catholicism as one of many worldwide religions that speak to spiritual concepts and experiences without having to wholly embrace their particular belief system. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of was more interested in a more non-sectarian, like the Rosicrucians I mentioned earlier. They're non-sectarian. They're just into understanding, phenomena that maybe, for instance, they'll talk about reincarnation, which is more of an Eastern concept, but they'll also hold and recognize Jesus as a very advanced spirit, and same with Buddha and Krishna and others. So I think what happened for me is my understanding of spirituality kind of widened the lens a little bit for me, and I couldn't just stay with just one interpretation through the Catholic system.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting. The other day I was actually in line picking up some medication. There was a lady behind me, and we started talking about spirituality in general. She brought it up, and we were just talking about it, and I was saying how, in my opinion, it's important for a person to believe whatever it is that they want to believe. I believe all the roads lead to the same place, but you can take different roads to get there. And there was a gentleman behind her, and he said, if you don't worship God as we know it in religion, you're worshiping false idols, and don't pray to false idols. And I mean, he just went on a rant for about, I don't know, 8 or 9 minutes. And it was just interesting to see how his belief system kept him somewhat in a box, as far as I'm concerned, because he was not willing to expand his consciousness to at least look at something else.
I agree. And I think people, and that's why I believe there's a lot of people get very entrenched and rooted in their beliefs. And I think we all need, I have a chapter in my book called Sitting Lightly in the Saddle of Belief, because mm-hmm. I think we all need to have the humility to realize that, hey, what we believe today, new lights might be shed on things. And we have to be able to be open to conceive of, once we thought the earth was flat, right? Everybody
exactly.
believed that. So things come along, whether it's science or your own. I believe religion, the difference in religion and spirituality, to go back, is religion is oftentimes a set of beliefs that we're asked to embrace, whereas spirituality can be your own experience. Like if you have an out-of-body experience and you're realizing that your consciousness is outside your body and not attached to your brain at that point, you're having a direct experience with spirit. If you're in your own spirit, if you're beholding the spirit of somebody who's deceased, you're operating in the dimension of spirit. So I like to differentiate just purely embracing certain beliefs that may be religious versus having spiritual experiences. Like people have NDEs, they have a very different perspective on life after death. Many times they don't fear death as much because they realize that their consciousness and awareness can be very very available to them outside their body.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I actually had a cousin who had an NDE, and she wouldn't talk about it for years. And then finally she talked about it, and she goes, when I left my body, she goes, I didn't see that light that they were talking about, and I felt really cold. In fact, I said, let me pull up the covers. So I... It led a very interesting, in quotes, life up until that point. She has since changed, she did like a 180 and she's changed things around. But she was very cognizant of the fact that, okay, yes, I do survive on some level. And, what I'm doing now is not working. So perhaps I need to make an adjustment.
Yeah, it's a very powerful experience, and the fascinating thing about NDEs, and the first person I worked with who had an NDE was back in the late 70s when I was in graduate school, and he had come into the University Counseling Center because in the aftermath of his NDE, we know this now that people who have NDEs often are more inclined to pick up on the subtle impressions of a psychic nature. They may have precognitive dreams or clairvoyance or other kinds of, it's almost as if during the NDE, the primary tethering of their awareness to their brain or to their physicality gets loosened up a bit. and they're more available and open to subtle impressions. So it's fascinating because many of the people I've worked with over the years have had, you know, particularly people who have had like psychic experiences or beholding spirit directly or other experiences of a exceptional nature, oftentimes have an NDE in their background.
They definitely do. Folks, we're speaking with Dr. Frank Pasciuti. His book is Chrysalis Crisis, How Life Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation. You can check him out at his website, and that's frankpasciuti.com. That's FrankPasciuti.com. Frank, very interesting title for the book. Why did you choose it, and what prompted you to write about this subject? Why this book?
Well, you know, I actually, first of all, I like the metaphor. I read the story that I opened the book with. It's the preface, and it, if I can repeat it now, I'll share very briefly. The little girl goes in her backyard, and she starts noticing that there's this caterpillar, and every day becomes fascinated and watches the caterpillar eventually create a cocoon for itself. And, of course, then it goes into a dormant period where it's in the chrysalis stage. And then later on, she notices that that as a butterfly now, after it's undergone metamorphosis, it's trying to break out of the cocoon, and she sees it struggling. And she's noticing it's flapping its wings and looking like it can't get free from the cocoon. And so she tries to give it a help and touches its wings, and it falls out and dies on the ground. And she's devastated. She goes inside and talks to her mom, and her mom says, "Sweetheart, the butterfly has to struggle. That struggle is important because the struggle to free itself from the cocoon also strengthens its wings for flight." And I thought, oh, that has a dual purpose then. And I thought, how that feels very appropriate to the kind of struggle people undergo to free themselves from various crises. But in doing so, they usually are challenged to strengthen areas of their ability to function in 10 key areas that I identify. But in the aftermath of the crisis, once they get stabilized and they feel they've navigated through the initial impact, there's often a pivoting point that I see where people will now look at what was required of them to integrate the experience or navigate through the crisis. And it often leads them, if they so choose, to strengthen those areas. And it can frequently lead to a significant transformation in their life. So I like that metaphor, and the idea of using it, and the idea of using crises as a way to amplify the various areas that they're working on seemed appropriate.
Well, it definitely is. In the book, in the beginning, you say there are two things that are certain, and this is a philosophy you grew up with, that everything changes and that there's a certain amount of suffering. And a lot of people believe once you embrace the concept of spirituality and you meditate and you clear your chakras and you adjust your aura, that everything is just perfect. Why isn't that so?
That's a great question. Well, I think there's a concept I share in the back of the book. It is called spiritual bypassing. And there's people who think that if I just jump into all the spiritual technologies and I start meditating and doing yoga and praying and doing all these things that I'm going to suddenly be exempt from having to develop all these other foundational areas that I identify. And frequently when they do, they find out that, you know, hey, I may be meditating and suddenly what comes to mind is an unresolved conflict that I haven't integrated cognitively or emotionally, or I'm struck or I'm preoccupied with, you know, being, you know, ideas of things that come to mind about things I did wrong morally, or I lose myself. And so I think that even though it's a wonderful thing to aspire towards, and certainly, certainly a following spirit, you know, employing certain spiritual technologies like learning to meditate and doing it daily, or, you know, doing centering techniques like journaling and yoga and other things like that, they can enhance our lives. But we still have to work through mastering the physical dimension, and we have to learn how to be open to our feelings, and we have to look at our thinking and our beliefs, as you mentioned a few times. We need to make sure we're clear about our moral compass, and we have to develop ourselves socially. We have a social IQ, a moral IQ, a intellectual IQ, and emotional IQ. These are all areas of development that also need attention. You just can't run by those and jump into just a spiritual practice and expect those to just, you know, come along by themselves.
Yes. Now, you mentioned earlier the 10 areas that of human growth. Could you talk to us a little bit more about them? Give us an overview of them, please.
Sure. I'll give you a flyover. First of all, if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's a developmental process here that I kind of follow along. I have a bias towards my own an idea of development, and I believe it occurs not only in one life but over lifetimes. But it tends to, you know, there tend to be what I identify as five. This is a very broad spectrum of a range of consciousness that we humans, there are certain areas that we need to learn to identify and master to a certain degree. And the first I call foundational, and that is we need to gain a certain level of understanding and mastery of our physical world. Even though we're spirits in a physical body, we are in a physical world. And so we need to, as best we can, learn to understand our bodies physically, nutrition, health, exercise. We need to learn how to function in a physical world. We need to learn have a good relationship with money and understand we need to provide ourselves a food and shelter for these physical bodies. So there's a certain, so physicality is one of those areas. One that's very relevant to what you've talked about is the idea of intellectual development and looking at our acquisition of new knowledge, being curious, examining our beliefs, being willing to let them go if they don't apply any longer or they need to be modified. That's an intellectual development. Mm-hmm. Then we have emotional development, which is one of the harder areas, because being aware of what you feel isn't so easy. Many of us are raised to be aware of certain feelings and not others. And so physicality, intellectual development, emotional development, social development, learning how to become comfortable working with or being with other people, and learning how to benefit from community, and then moral development, which are kind of like being able to live in a society with others and uphold certain moral standards so that we can be civil and not have ourselves being hounded by a guilty conscience. So those five areas are foundational. The next three areas in these 10 key areas I refer to as personal, and that is the need to be open to a constant changing sense of identity. It's developmentally something we go from, you know, identifying by our gender, by our culture, by our family, our region, our country, but that identity can identify as a spirit, as a healer, and there's many ways our identity shifts throughout lifetime. Another area in the personal is intimacy, and by that I mostly mean the intimacy of learning how to share of oneself on a very deep level, connecting with others in the Martin Buber's notion of I, thou, and I share deeply above me, and you're inclined to do the same, and together we break new ground. So there's intimacy development. And then the other one in the personal area is existential development. And by that, I mean coming to terms with finding meaning and purpose in life, understanding death and putting that in perspective. These are the big existential issues, responsibility and freedom. And so those three comprise the personal area. And then the two that I'm particularly fascinated by, they're the transpersonal. Intuitive development, learning how to awaken to some of the very things you already are awakened to, you know, the intuitive impressions that can help us understand ways in which we can help others through healing, psychic awareness, this being able to pick up on the subtleties of intuitive perceptions. Mm-hmm. And then the last is spiritual development, which by that I mean learning how to understand direct contact with spirit, our own, being able to be aware of ourselves as a spirit, and to be able to be aware of the spirit dimension where we can get guidance and we can behold others. And so there's a certain amount of development that we're required to do in order to be able to pick up on those very subtle impressions.
Okay. Well, earlier I misspoke. I said Bill's story was about the car accident, but it was actually Brad's story. So I want to talk about the intuitive and the spiritual, but I want to talk about the moral crisis first, because, you know, if you turn on the TV or if you turn on, you know, radio,
We have a lot of moral things going on, not only in our government, but governments across the world. We're in a great time of change. I hope it turns out positively, but we're in a great time of change. So talk to us about the moral crisis.
Well, you know, I start that chapter by giving an example of the old the ignorance is no excuse for the law. And this is driving, the name of the chapter is Driving Blind. And so I use a fellow who was not aware that on many levels, his unconscious, his feelings that he wasn't aware of, some dynamics that he grew up, that he was influenced by in his family, were influencing choices he was making. And he was doing things that were against the law, and it had a serious crisis as a result. And so not to judge, but to say a lot of times, you know, people, you know, Carl Jung had talked about our shadow side. And sometimes you'll hear spiritual teachers will talk about our lower self versus our higher self. So there is an element of understanding that sometimes what is clearly aberrant behavior or behavior that runs against the code of our moral understandings that we're all trying to learn and live by, that's that we need to be able to look at that and examine it, because when you shine a light on the shadow, you'll often find a lot of confusion. And sometimes people are not aware of what they're doing, and maybe some things just don't register. Like, for instance, sociopathy, sociopaths who don't register feelings can do things that others would of us would not think of. They would say, oh, my gosh, I would never steal that person's wallet, because that would put them in a real pickle if they didn't have their license and they lost their money. But somebody who doesn't care about feelings might say, well, you know what, they left it out, so I took it. So there's a lot of reasons why people stray morally. And this is not to say that we should not, I mean, even though psychologists are often, or therapists particularly, are often said, oh, well, you know, you guys are seeking to understand everything, and would you ever put anybody in jail? Well, I do think that consequences need to follow, because society needs to be protected, even if somebody is kind of dangerous out there and they've got, you know, reasons for it from their upbringing. Maybe they were beaten and so they become violent, or, you know, maybe they were treated really badly and so they become, you know, like a antisocial personality or do things, or they, maybe they were just never taught right and wrong and they go out and steal. Nevertheless, they're responsible for the behaviors. But one of the cornerstones of psychotherapy, for instance, is all behaviors can be explained and understood. And if people are seeking to understand themselves, even if they do things wrong, I still think that there's always a chance, even if they're incarcerated as a result of that problem, that they can get the insight and learn and change behaviors if they are motivated to do so. So that all falls in moral development.
Okay. Well, you talk in the book about a lot of people live double lives and they really don't know it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we're all sort of like, when I first meet people coming into my office, I often give emphasis to the idea that we all have an unconscious. We all have areas of ourselves we're not aware of. And both from that unconscious can come some of that lower self. I think it was Jesus who said, you know, if you don't, what you don't know in a sense about yourself can both cause you damage and do a lot of destruction. And at the same time, what also comes out of the unconscious is some of our higher capacities and gifts. But unfortunately, they all run through the same system. So we can be functioning in a very high way in one area of our life. But in other areas, we may not be aware that they may be contributing to us compromising our own moral guidance system. And so we can seem very double. And sometimes you just choose, you know, like, for instance, and this is not because of a moral hangup, a large part of my early career as a clinical psychologist, I kept my interests in parapsychology and psychic abilities and all that kind of on the side, because I was afraid I'd get marginalized by my colleagues. I wanted to be accepted as a very legitimate, you know, sound therapist. So theirs were a little bit, I felt like I lived a double life, but it wasn't because I did anything wrong. It was probably more because I didn't have the codes yet to come out in my other beliefs.
Okay. Well, talk to us now about the intuitive crisis.
Well, I use an example of my uncle, for example. In World War II, he had a premonition that he was coming over from enemy lines. He was working, soldiering under Patton, General Patton, and his platoon had been on the enemy side on some kind of reconnaissance or undertaking some kind of campaign, and they were looking for a place to stay one night. And they were about to settle down, and he had a strong sense that it wasn't safe there, that there was something wrong, that something bad was going to happen. And he was a very grounded soldier. He was kind of a man's man, and he was somebody everybody trusted, so they weren't sure why he persisted in saying that they shouldn't stay there. Well, lo and behold, just so that the rest of his group could settle down, his leader said, okay, let's go back and find another place to stay for tonight. And during the night, there was the sounds of mortar fire keeping everybody awake, and he was particularly like feeling, having a hard time sleeping because he felt like he made a spectacle of himself. But the next morning, they moved forward again, and they came across the spot they were originally going to settle, and it had completely gotten bombed out. So
wow.
For him, that was kind of a crisis, because people thought maybe he's got battle fatigue, maybe he's losing his mind, and he wasn't. It wasn't a breakdown. It was a breakthrough. And so he started realizing, wow, that is really – so if that were his situation – and the first person I worked with who came to me at Michigan State University, he was having a series of precognitive dreams of people dying, and indeed a few of them did. And he was so confused by this that he thought he was the angel of death, which sounded crazy, right? Until he found out that because he had had an NDE, he started opening up to these impressions. And these are the kinds of crises that I would say are intuitive crises, particularly for people who are not aware that these functions are all part of our inherent capacities and range of consciousness that's available to us. And many times in awakening to these capacities, a crisis may precipitate getting familiar with them. And so I throw those all under the notion of intuitive crises, where people, those are usually understood to be spiritual emergencies.
Okay. Well, in the book, you also talk about intuition continuum. What is that?
Well, I think of my first experience. I was kind of looking for a way to look at a sort of a spectrum or a range of how intuition can function. And Carl Jung, who's one of my favorite people, talked about intuition as one form of perception, becoming aware of things. You know, in his psychological type theory, he tends to talk about sensing as a form of intuition, which is when we use our objective senses, what we can see, hear, touch, feel, taste, smell. And then he talks about intuitive forms of perceptions, which are more indirect by way of the unconscious. And I tend to think of psychic capacities and intuitive healing and intuitive impressions as all coming by way of the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
But there are varying degrees of that. So people might have an impression or a moment of an epiphany, which is kind of an intuitive awareness. But people are also able to have awareness of things that haven't happened yet, like precognitions. So I try to offer a spectrum of ways in which intuitive impressions can move anywhere from just having a hunch about something to truly having precognitive abilities or intuitive healing capacities, and I see them all falling into a range of intuitive awareness that is available to everyone. But some people have it developed more than others. Intuitives, like yourself, already are gifted in that way, where others may not have awakened to that capacity yet.
Yeah, I kind of liken it to someone who does art. You know, if you give me a ruler and ask me to draw a straight line, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. But from other people can look at something and reproduce it on canvas or paper, you know. So it's just the way your, I guess, natural talents are.
Well, I think there is some cult. I think there is an evolution. And I tend to, like I said, I'm a developmental person. I cite Teilhard de Chardin, who was the French priest who talked about a teleological drive, which is that we're all in the process of becoming and evolving. And I'll stick my neck out and say that I think it's done over lifetimes. I don't think it's, I think we're all heading, as you said well before, paths are many, truth is one. There's many ways to evolve as a spiritual being. And yet I think it takes place over lifetimes. And I think as you develop and you awaken these various faculties, they carry on with you. So just like, you know, people are, you know, you have the Mozarts who come into life early on and display talents that, in my opinion, suggest maybe earlier development in their life. I do think that people who have intuitive capacities probably are reaping the benefit of past development. And I think that while everybody has the capacities for expanded consciousness, there are those who've already worked on that, and yet people can all jump into that. And I think part of what when you mentioned earlier about doing the work and doing the early developmental work, so they can open up to the to clear intuitive impressions, they can start realizing that they too, everybody on some level has psychic capacity.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I think if you just pay attention and you're aware and you don't put judgment on it, you grow that muscle, if you will, more quickly and even more strongly.
Yes. There's a fellow down at Duke University, which is part of the J.B. Ryan Center, the fellow who did all the research on parapsychology and coined the terms ESP, extrasensory mm-hmm. perception. Well, his name is Jim Carpenter, and he wrote a book called First Sight. And his premise of his book is that everybody is actually registering psychic impressions, but they're just not – I mean, everybody is having psychic impressions, but they're not registering them. And mm-hmm. many times, subliminally, we may actually be responding to a psychically received impression. And like the example might be, for some reason, we decide to go home a different way, and we find out later on the news there was a pile up of cars on that road. And we think, wow, wasn't that coincidental that we didn't do that? Well, he would suggest it's more than coincidence. It's actually a psychic impression that maybe we responded to but never consciously made the connection. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're registering. I think that the trick is to become conscious and to learn how to harness those capacities like a healer might.
Okay. Well, you talk about consciousness, but before we talk a bit about the spiritual crisis, talk to us for a moment about consciousness.
Well, you know what? I am one of many people who are trying to get their heads around consciousness, and we're all like blind men, women poking at an elephant, right? And everybody mm-hmm. sort of sees the side. Everybody tries to interpret what consciousness is through the vantage point of their own biases. And for me, I come at it as a psychotherapist, clinician, or a clinical parapsychologist. Sometimes I like to identify with. I think of consciousness as the ground of all being, and I think. Probably just in terms of how most people might explain consciousness. I think we're talking about God. We're talking about the ultimate consciousness that surrounds us, gives life to us, gives rise to everything, and permeates everything. So I think of consciousness. Sometimes people confuse consciousness with conscious. They'll say, aren't you talking about conscious? And I'll say, well, consciousness is kind of a foundation. It's like what Carl Jung and Wolfgang Pauli, the Nobel laureate physicist, once called unus mundus, the one ground. It's the one, it's consciousness at the bottom of everything. And yet we may not be consciously aware of how our consciousness may function, right? Mm-hmm. So you have these 10 key areas I identify as capacities of consciousness. Our physicality is an expression of consciousness. Our emotionality is an expression of consciousness. Intuition is a form of consciousness. But we're trying to learn to gain more and more conscious mastery of those 10 key areas. Your consciousness is working. Your consciousness is there when you're sleeping at night. And if you learn to be aware of your dreams and you learn how to lucid dream, you might explore alternate ways of being aware of your consciousness. So I think we're all on a teleological path of becoming more and more conscious of how consciousness arises. And ultimately, as Teilhard de Chardin would say, we're all moving towards the omega point where we are one, consciously aware of our divine nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for sharing that. Now talk to us about the spiritual crisis.
Well, in the spiritual crisis, I include experiences that people have that are directly related to beholding spirit or experiencing their own spirit separate from their body. So in that area, I will talk about, I will address areas like past life breakthroughs, memories of past lives where their spirit was in another body, or the beholding a spirit. Somebody who died, maybe who presents themselves, and you pick up on a direct beholding of a spirit. or near-death experience where your own spirit is outside your body. Many of these experiences can throw people into crisis, particularly if they've had no knowledge of it beforehand. And oftentimes they come in when I see them. They often, their first thought, and they're kind of filled with trepidation to think, here I am, I'm seeing a shrink, this person's going to tell me I'm crazy. And oftentimes I'll say, well, you're feeling crazy because it's feeling really abnormal to you. But I differentiate abnormal from normal and what I call and what has been called supernormal. So, you know, we have this normal range of functioning, and then we have exceptional situations where sometimes somebody is psychotic or they are hallucinating, and that would be abnormal. But on the other side of the equation, something that's not as familiar to you may be actually what Frederick Myers and most recently Dean Radin call supernormal. You're having an experience which is beyond normal. Most people don't have it, but you are. And so that's when people need a lot of education and help to understand that they have these capacities, you're just not familiar with them. But those I will all throw under the spiritual emergency and under the direct spiritual the capacity and spiritual development.
Okay. Well, you know, I get a lot of calls from people that are looking for spirit release. They feel that there is some energy, entity, devil, alien, whatever, that is bothering them. How does that fit into the, I guess, either abnormal or supernormal consciousness that you've just been speaking of?
Well, I'm sorry, I missed that last statement.
I said, or do you think they're just crazy?
Well, I do think that people can feel really crazy if they're experiencing possession or spirit attachment. And mm-hmm. it is kind of frightening, but I do think there is the capacity for people to, for whatever reason, get themselves caught in a situation where they are being affected by other spirits, and I don't mm-hmm. want to make everybody paranoid, but there is such a thing, and so I don't work directly with possession, but I have had a few people come to see me, and I've directed them out to work with people who are more familiar with how to navigate those areas. So mm-hmm. there's a way where, you know, I know that, you know, people can sometimes have a, I mean, even you mentioned earlier, the person, a relative who had a near-death experience.
Yeah,
even near-death experiences, they're not always positive for some people. I'm trying to think of the woman who wrote a book about near-death experiences, talking about the ones that people don't see a light or don't come back and feel bliss and all this. Sometimes being in that out-of-body state or an expanded sense of consciousness, they may be confronted with a lower self aspects of their own, and that can be less, you know, less of a positive experience. I feel like I drifted from your question.
No, you didn't. You answered it perfectly. Now, there was one thing, and this is not under the spiritual category. I think it was more under the moral crisis. You talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome, and I think everybody knows about that. But then you go further and you talk about PTG, post-traumatic growth. Talk to us about that, because this is actually the first time I've run across that.
Well, it's very similar to the idea of a chrysalis crisis, and that there is a time where I think when you go through a traumatic experience, it can be, you know, like if you go through traumatic, let's say you go through a traumatic experience, you're in a very bad car accident and one of your loved ones dies. Mm-hmm. And it may be just, and you may also get very, you know, you might also undergo some sort of like physical consequence, but maybe after you come out of that, part of your ability, in an attempt to try to understand that experience, you may actually be forced to expand your awareness in terms of your feelings. And that would be the kind of transformation I'm referring to. And I think post-traumatic growth is similar. Sometimes when I work with people who have PTSD, I will, and if I feel like they have not fully integrated that experience, I will, through hypnosis, try to establish with them a safe place they can go to. But at another time, maybe try to get them to go back and revisit consciously that experience so they can diffuse the emotion that's still attached to it, and also examine the beliefs that got anchored away with that experience so that they can free and liberate themselves from the hold of that experience. Because oftentimes, as with PTSD, the feelings there are so overwhelming at the time you undergo the experience that often, almost like you go unconscious when you're subjected to enough physical pain, you render those feelings unconscious in the way Freud initially understood repression to work. But you forget you forgot, and those feelings are still feeling threatening to you. So they're threatening from the outside. They almost like you feel threatened from the inside out. It's within you. So people who undergo PTSD, sometimes in the resolution of that post-traumatic stress and the incident that may have caused it, they may actually grow, not only resolve the situation and finally integrate it emotionally and cognitively and physically in all the ways they may not have been able to do it initially, but they may lead to some expansion of consciousness. They may widen their range of emotion and or change their understanding of life, or have a shift in some existential growth or their sense of identity. So there can be many ways, if you work with it in the aftermath, that you could actually grow from the crisis.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that with us. Now, when we go to your website, frankpasciuti.com, that's FrankPasciuti.com, what are we going to find?
Well, you're going to see the book, and I have a little page in there about how I do therapy for people who are seeking to work with me locally. I have a blog, but I haven't been doing a lot of posting on it, and I'm going to start ramping that up a little bit more, as I've been encouraged to do by the person who's trying to help me get the word out there more. So I need to get more diligent about that. I have a couple of posts in there. And it's a general, I don't have a specific site for the book, but I have, it's kind of a general site for me. You'll also get a lead on where the book can be found, mostly on Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon and everywhere.
That is the great Amazon, right? So, and you'll get a feel for who I am. I do share a little bit about how I do therapy and that, and my location, and just general information on me.
Yeah, and folks, when you go to his website and you look at the information, you get a great sense of who he is, and you get an even greater sense of the energy of the book, okay? Check it out, because it's definitely worth your time and worth your attention. Now, Frank, out of everything that we talked about today, which has been great in my opinion, what is it that you want the reader and or listener to take away from your book? What's that central point?
The central point is that, first of all, we're all on the path. We're all working on growing and evolving, and that many times a crisis, as in the Chinese word for crisis, is opportunity. If we are faced with a crisis, oftentimes, once we navigate through that crisis, there may be something in there for us to learn about ourselves, and that we can choose to do that or not. But I would encourage people to say, once you work through the initial impact of the crisis, to ask yourself, was there a lesson there for me? Did I learn something from that? And because at least in that way, you don't feel so victimized by life. And you can say, well, if I come away from a crisis where, even though it was painful, and oftentimes that's why, crises, suffering gets our attention, there may be something in there for you to take away in your own growth and transformation.
Okay, thank you. Very well said. Well, folks, we've been speaking with Dr. Frank Pasciuti. The book is Chrysalis Crisis, How Life's Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation. It's available on Amazon and, just go into your bookseller if you're fortunate enough in your area to have a physical bookstore. For it, because this is a book that will help you if you're looking to transform your life, if you're looking to heal, if you're looking to get over something, this is definitely the book for you. So Frank, thank you for sharing your information today, and thank you so much for writing this very enlightening book.
Thank you, Monique. I really appreciate your input, and I enjoyed your questions and being on your show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And to the audience also, thank you for being with us today as we collectively get over it. The Divine in Me honors the Divine in You. I'm truly honored and I appreciate your time and attention. And folks, when you're ready to raise your vibration and shift your energy, you can give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of your own chrysalis connection and change your life. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Namaste.